the Heights was
a lot of troubleshooting too, because there were people listening in other parts of the world. So we had to figure out the round trip time for us to send signal to Mexico, have it come back to New York so we could stream it to California, and then they could all be in sync. I think it was like a 40 millisecond lag or something like that. You know, but we were like sending beeps through headphones and signals trying to figure out, oh, how many frames off is this? And then eventually we got it to line up so that we can all work together cohesively.
All right, welcome back everyone to the Post Production Club podcast. If you're new listening to this, thanks so much for taking the time. If you're old, you've been listening to this, thanks for sticking with us. Super grateful for everyone that's, you know, reached out and offered some really great encouragement, some things that we can improve on. I love getting feedback on this kind of stuff and just want to continue to be offering value as we talk to different people. So if there's things that you want to see improved or even ideas and topics and people that you want to talk to, don't hesitate to reach out. Today, we're hanging out with Vinny Alfano, who is young, but he's incredibly talented. And I only say he's young because I want to be still considered young. So yeah, we're the same. Anyways, he's a sound designer and re-recording mixer. What is a re-recording mixer? Well, you'll find out. But he worked on the comedy specials from incredible comedians like Liza Schlesinger, Louis C.K., and Mike Birbiglia. He was even Grammy nominated for his work with Sarah Silverman on her special Someone You Love. And his latest work was working on Mike Birbiglia's The Old Man in the Pool special, which is on Netflix. We talk a little bit about that, and you get to hear some fun stories about how he took advantage of Netflix's 5.1 surround mix to fully immerse, you know, the viewers at home to feel like they're actually at the special. And you hear some fun techniques about how he did that with microphone placement in the Lincoln Center at the actual event. He also did sound for In the Heights. We talk about the challenges, what it was like to do post on that musical during the pandemic. He's a humble and super chill dude, a New York native, and even did sound for this episode of the podcast. So shout out to Vinny. This is definitely the best sounding episode so far. So here we go. All right, welcome, Vinny.
Hey, Gavin, how's it going?
Good, man. Good. How are you doing today?
Doing all right. Nice, chill, easy Monday. Thanks so much for having me on the podcast. Really looking forward to chopping it up.
Yeah, excited to hear from you. Where does this podcast find you?
I'm in New York right now. I'm actually at Parabolic. It's a post house in the Flatiron area, Manhattan, and here most days of the week, cutting, editing, mixing. And yeah, it's a hot week this week, it's looking like.
Nice. Do you live in New York?
I do. I'm in Prospect Park, Brooklyn. So about maybe 25-minute train ride, half-hour train ride right outside of the Flatiron area. And you're cool. In Chicago, right?
Yeah, yep. We are in the, second New York? Who knows if they call it that. I mean,
we took your bean. We took the Chicago bean. I don't know if you've seen it recently. So,
well, I just saw that they were reopening it.
Oh, the New York one? I didn't even know it was closed.
Or the Chicago one. They're reopening the Chicago one too. I guess it was closed. So did you grow up in New York?
I did. Was born in Manhattan, then lived in Gravesend, Brooklyn for a little bit, and was in Rockaway, Queens, and was out in Long Island. So I kind of hopped around Manhattan, hopped around New York a lot just growing up. And then went to college in Florida for about 2 years, Full Sail University, and then back to Manhattan for a few years, and now I'm back in Brooklyn. So wow. It's one big circle.
Nice. Well, you've collaborated with some iconic comedians, and I kind of wanted to hear how you got started in sound design and re-recording and mixing. And what drew you specifically to working on those comedy specials?
It's quite the trajectory, quite the path. I was originally working in the music industry for a few years, doing a lot of kind of like session work as a guitar player, doing a lot of assistant engineering, a lot of recording, mixing, editing for different bands and singer-songwriters. And after being in the music industry for a while, moved over to kind of the field that you were in for a while, the ad agency world, doing a lot of sound for commercials, a couple of TV gigs here and there, but mainly, you know, commercial, short form digital content. was stuck in, was in that world for a little bit. And then went for, eventually went from commercials to TV shows and then TV shows to movies. And then recently, within the past couple of years, I had like a little bit of a streak on the comedy world. You know, worked with Eliza Schlesinger, Sarah Silverman, and most recently Mike Birbiglia on The Old Man in the Pool. And it just kind of happened one after the other. Just kind of worked on David Arnold's special, then worked on Eliza's, and it's kind of snowballed into that. And it's been great. It's a lot of fun working on comedy specials with comedians, and I love going to stand-up comedy shows, so it's all good.
It's awesome. What do you feel like was the turning point or the connecting piece that really helped you get onto those that streak, especially starting with the David Arnold special?
I was working at, still working at Parabolic, and once in a while we'll get jobs that come through, and you know, it's kind of like they get divvied up in terms of like who's going to mix them or who's going to edit them. And I was working on David Arnold's special, and I did the mix for it, and clients were super happy. Special came out great. And then like a month or two later, same thing happened. Eliza's special came through the door, and they're like, hey, you just did this comedy special. Do you want to take on this next one? And so Lou Goldstein, the owner, he's kind of just been, you know, made me the comedy go-to person a little bit during that moment, during that phase. Then I ended up doing Sarah Silverman's. And again, just they were all kind of happening at the same time, one after the other. And it was just kind of like weird sort of serendipity in terms of like comedy specials that were being produced and just coming through the doors. So super thankful for Parabolic just for hooking it up and setting me up with the jobs. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Is there anything that like stands out to you when it comes to like the comedy specials as far as sound engineering goes? Like what like allows you to stand apart as opposed to some like other sound mixer engineers?
I think what I try to do, at least when I kind of, you know, take on a special and take on the mix of a special, is really stay true to the integrity of like whatever the content is that the comedian's trying to bring across and what kind of happened during the filming of that special, you know, the night of. So, you know, for Mike Birbiglia's special, The Old Man in the Pool, for example, it's a comedy special, but it's also got a bit of a story arc to it in the sense that he'll have these moments where he's getting these laughs and he's hitting these punch lines and he's ripping these jokes, but then he'll kind of go and to this like intimate field and he's telling a story about, you know, interaction with his daughter. And then it becomes real emotional and like really kind of, you know, close in a sense, but then it goes back into laughs. So it was a matter of kind of like following the arc of, you know, how much are we going to bring in these crowd mics when these laughs hit? And then how much are we going to take them out when he's doing this sort of more intimate emotional storytelling segment? And then how are we going to go in and out of these moments? So yeah, for me, it's always about like whoever the comic is, what they're trying to do and how we can best represent it sonically. You know, they made the picture. I'm just trying to frame it a little bit.
Yeah. Which, talk about how you work with an editor, because you would think that an editor would kind of be making those decisions as to when to be, you know, hearing from the audience, which level of, you know, involvement from the audience and those different kind of moments. Talk about how do you work and collaborate and how do you make those decisions versus what you're just given from the editor?
I mean, it's funny because a lot of these kind of larger scale stand-up shows that are filmed, sometimes they'll maybe film the same show like two nights in a row or twice in the same day. And, you know, the comic's just wearing the same outfit and they'll cut back and forth between, you know, kind of maybe taking segments like, hey, the joke hit harder at the 9:30 show than the 7:30 show, whatever it might be. When I get the special from the editor, usually they've kind of made the selections in terms of, you know, which pieces are going to be there in the timeline. And then more so, you know, what we're doing with the mix is it's about, you know, especially for if it's a Netflix special, creating like a surround sound mix and taking all the different microphones that were used when the special was being recorded making it kind of like a surround sound layout so that, you know, the front mics are in the front, the back mics are in the back, the side mics are on the side. And then more so just like cleaning things up. Like, let's say you got like that one crowd member who's got like a really funky laugh and they're, you know, just cackling in the back left speaker. Well, maybe we'll try to like cut them out or lower them as much as possible so it's, you know, not disruptive to the viewing experience when someone's watching it at home on Netflix, you know, on their soundbar, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Talk about that with streaming platforms. How has your approach to sound design and mixing evolved to meet like those expectations of the way that we view things at home?
I was talking to someone about this the other day, and it's interesting to see how far we've come in just say like the past, you know, 50 years or 75 years, whatever it might be, in terms of there was TV screens and then there's theaters. And those were like very large screens per se, you know, especially a theater. And now things are just getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And people are just, you know, watching things on TikTok or watching things on their phone or on Instagram. And it's not just the screens that are getting smaller, but it's interesting that, you know, you used to just have TV shows and movies. And now you have, you know, Instagram reels and you have TikTok reels or you know, YouTube clips, whatever it might be. So the pie chart, in a sense, is also getting smaller and smaller and smaller and more so divvied up. Anytime I'm working on something, I just try to make it sound as good as possible for whatever the main format is. And then I think, you know, once it leaves the door, it's up to, I guess, the world and the internet as far as, you know, where it's going to live and how it's going to sound after that. But I, you know, it's one of those things I'll say to people, like, especially if they leave the studio when we're done with the mix, it's like, this is the best you're ever going to hear it, you know? Because mm-hmm. once you walk out of this room with these giant speakers, it's going to be watched on a phone or a laptop. So I always just try to make sure it's mixed properly as best as possible for the medium and then kind of hope for the best, you know? It's always going to sound different no matter what. So, and I'm sure that you in the VFX world and in the edit world kind of have to deal with the same sort of thing, right? Where it's like, is this going to be in 1080p or is it going to only live on a platform where it's like streaming on 270, you know, which is kind of the nature of the beast at that point is what I feel like what we're contending with.
Yeah, for sure. And you do kind of have to like, you mix for or you create for the highest common denominator, but you got to plan for the lowest.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. So what other challenges do you face when you're working on like comedy specials compared to other genres?
It's interesting because a comedy special is kind of like a singular organism in the sense that you really just, or not singular organism, but it's, you really only, I'll take that one again. We'll cut that out. With a comedy special, you really only have the handheld mic of the comedian and the crowd. And those are really the only elements that you're working with. So it's sort of a limited palette in the sense. Whereas if you're working on a TV show or a movie, there's, you know, doors, there's footsteps, there's clothing rustle, there's dialogue, there's music, there's, you know, source music or score, whatever it could be. So there's all these different elements that could be at play with like a TV show or a film. With the comedy special, you really only have the crowd and the comic. And it's more so about making it feel as real as possible, again, for anyone who's watching it on their laptop or on their soundbar. So that's part of the limitation, you know, because you're not going to be cutting in sound effects and fake laughs because it's just not going to be true to the integrity of whatever was happening that night. And again, if the crowd is quiet, you're not going to cut in clothing rustle or footsteps because it's going to sound fake and not sound like a comedy special at that point. It's going to sound added. So really the trick is, again, maintaining whatever happened that night and making it sound as best as possible through like, you know, EQ or volume automation, or, you know, maybe trying to cut out pieces of crowd here and there if you have the mics available. You know, what's cool about the most recent special, Old Man in the Pool with Mike Birbiglia, is we had 15 room mics. So that's a lot of mic, that's a lot of room, and you can cut out that, you know, one person who's cackling, and it's not going to feel empty in a sense if you just cut them out for that one moment or two, or try to cover them up with a different laugh track, or not laugh track, but laugh recording of a different crowd member.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a little bit of behind the scenes of what may or may not happen.
Totally. Was that something that you were brought in before the production, or is that just something that they happened to do that you're like, oh, sweet, this is awesome?
With the 15 mics, so John DeUva was the production sound mixer. And I think he actually did Eliza's special also. He's like one of the bigger comedian production sound mixers. And that's all him. He's like a magician with room mics and hand mics and, you know, the face mic that Mike Birbiglia is wearing. So that was all his decision. And then he just sent it over and it's like, this is incredible. This is going to make it so much more fun. It's going to make it easy. It's going to make it sound cool. So yeah. Shout out to John DeUva.
Yeah. I'm sure that makes your job so much easier and gives you more time to be able to just really hone in and focus on the creativity, the art of it, the polishing, as opposed to needing to fix a ton of mistakes.
Yep. It's pretty cool. And he'll give you a plot point too, so you can literally see, you know, mics one and two are over here in the theater. You know, mics three and four are here. Mic five is like in this weird area because the bathroom door is there, you know? So again, having that like flexibility and accessibility to the mics is huge.
Now, is that like a rare occurrence or is that the norm?
That's usually the norm for most larger specials that would be on like a Netflix or an HBO. It's usually, you know, you get a handful of room mics. Yeah, it's not always 15, you know, give or take, but
sure,
there'll be a handful, which is cool.
Yeah. Okay. Because I was going to say, it begs the question, why is this not like the thing that is just standard if it gives you such control?
I think it's part of it is like club space, production, you know, budgets and time, whatever, any, you know, could be any sort of number of factors in there.
Yeah. I know in my like past, you know, filmmaking experience, we worked on one comedy special. I helped shoot it live and then helped edit it and handle things in post. And we did not have that luxury and because of budget. And so that would have been super nice, you know, and would have given us a lot more options. For The Old Man in the Pool, can you elaborate on any other technical or creative decisions that went into the making of it in post to feel like you were actually there?
In terms of sound, really the main thing was just making sure that we were matching Mike's energy with the crowd energy, with the story that's being told. So you kind of have those three dynamics at play at all times. And again, there's moments where he's like ripping jokes, you know. There's one moment where he's like talking about the leak started in his kitchen and he had to move his family into an Airbnb. And he's like, you know, I don't know how many of you guys know this, but you're not supposed to have water coming from the ceiling in your kitchen, you know? And he's getting these huge laughs and just ripping on that moment. And you kind of want to like ride it up at that point. So you can hear, you know, everyone in the crowd laughing just because it was, you know, great joke, great bit. But then again, there are moments where, you know, he's talking about, you know, just his health issues, you know, his daughter, and he's just really becoming, I guess, vulnerable in the sense, but it's, you know, he's bringing it down to earth. And when he does that, it's part of the trick is making the crowd feel there sonically without hearing them. And then again, bringing it back up when it feels appropriate just to match whatever sort of anecdote he's going into next. That was really like the main crux of it. You know, for a different sort of comedy special, like with Sarah Silverman or Eliza Schlesinger, where they're just, it's not as story driven per se. You know, there is a through line, but it's not, they're not getting down to like an emotional level sometimes, like how Mike might be doing it. You're kind of just, you know, making sure the crowd's hitting, making sure the laughs are heard as much as the comedians. So it's just a slightly different dynamic in terms of comedy specials with, you know, different styles of comedy.
Have you ever had to utilize like fake laughs?
No. Yeah. The only time really that'll sort of happen is if it's like, you know, sitcom-y or like a game show or something. And maybe we want to like kind of like raise things up and like raise the stakes a little bit. But no, anytime I'm doing a comedy special, it's always sticking true to what, you know, happened that night. That's the goal.
So
long story short, for comedy specials, no. For anything else, you know, a funny movie or like a funny TV show or sitcom, yeah, we'll maybe throw in a laugh, little laugh here and there.
Nice. Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe even the, you know, comedians, if they're like, oh, I want to like pump up the laughs in post. Like, have you ever been asked to do that?
Not yet. No, I've been asked to, there was a special I was doing where there was like bottle clinks, like the crowd was drunk. they were like, can you take out as many of these clinks as possible? Cause you know, they're stepping on the joke. And like, that was tricky because if there was a clink in the laugh, we'd have to kind of like shorten the edit a little bit here and there. So that was probably one of the only situations where I was manipulating laughs, but again, not to make things sound funnier per se, but just to get rid of something that would have been distracting for the joke or, you know, the comedian.
Yeah, totally. That's really interesting. The things that people who watch it would never know. And it's just, and that's the point, is like your work should be invisible and should make, you know, the experience really great. And I heard Shane Gillis say that, you know, some of his worst shows are when the crowd is most rowdy and like excited for him, because it does kind of, the room gets a little bit out of control.
I believe it. Yeah.
It's so fascinating.
It's funny how the energy in the room can like really, you know, affect things and shift, you know, and be unpredictable in that sort of setting. That's what makes it, you know, that's what makes comedy comedy in a way.
Yeah, for sure. So do you have any project that was like a complete disaster? Whether like not your fault or not, but just like from stuff you were given or maybe like, you know, client.
Yeah. I would never say anything's a complete disaster. I do think that especially in like the indie world, you'll see stuff done one way where it's like, it could have been so much easier for everyone else if it was done this way instead. And I think that's just more of like a technical barrier or technical encounter in the post world. But personally for me, I don't think I've encountered anything that's been a disaster. And anytime I'm on a project, I always try to do like a little post-mortem afterwards and just be like, what worked well? What didn't work well? You know, is there a better software that can do this quicker, that'll sound better? Or is there a better form of communication digitally that we could use with clients? One of the things I started experimenting with recently is Dropbox Replay. I don't know if you checked it out or not, but it's they're pretty much Jack and Frame IO at this point. but it seems like they have cool features where you can export, you know, to Timeline, similar to Frame IO in the sense. Okay. Like you can export it to Avid or Premiere, whatever it might be. So that's like something new I've tried to work through recently, but yeah. There's never been anything that is like, oh man, we can't do anything here. You know, this is unsalvageable.
That's good. Well, that's good.
Yeah. I did one film last year called Sorry You Have to See This. And we did the whole film completely in post. So every sound in the movie was completely recorded in post, all the backgrounds, the Foley sound effects, everything.
ADR.
Everything completely in post.
Did they not have any sound on set?
Yeah, it was a really complex shoot. And Josh, who's the director I worked with a few times, I love his ambition and like the ideas he comes up with, because it does make me think, oh, how can we do this? And he just had like a really time-strapped shoot. And he's like, we're not going to do any sound. Do you think we can do this all in post? And I'm looking through like the script he sent and, you know, the treatment. I'm like, we can. It's going to be interesting to do. Mm-hmm. And the film turned out awesome. It's really cool. It's online. It's on Film Supply if you want to check it out.
Cool.
But it's doing that. It was kind of like a moment where I was like, oh, we can do anything in post if we really tried. So shout out to Josh Leong, because that was a lot of fun to do and the movie came out great.
That is so awesome. I'm definitely going to check that out. I feel like the best stuff comes through creative constraint.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes less is more.
Yeah. I want to hear about your work on In the Heights. It's such a sound-driven film. How does the sound design process differ when working on like live recording specials versus a film?
Completely different. I mean, In the Heights was a beast of a project to be involved in. And Lou Goldstein, the owner of Parabolic in New York, he's actually the mixed pretty much the whole film. But he brought me on to do some sound work, some sound editorial. I handled a lot of the ADR in that film, and we recorded some of the singing. And I mean, that's a film where, I mean, we were on that for maybe 2.5 years.
Wow.
And there's just a lot going on in terms of sound. He'd be the person to ask about the mix for that. But for the ADR, I mean, we all like the radio voices that you hear in the backgrounds, you know, that was something we had compiled and like worked with different voice actors to, you know, excuse me, make sure it was authentic to Washington Heights and the environment that they're in. There's one scene during the fireworks section where we were still working on the film during COVID, and they wanted to re-record some vocals for Vanessa's character. And so we mailed a recording kit with like a laptop, a U87 mic, a boom mic, a lav mic, interface to her apartment. I believe she was in Mexico at the time. Zoomed in and recorded the vocals like in her bedroom. And it was ended up in the film.
Wow.
We recorded over Zoom and using the software called Clean Feed. And we were like, just shocked that we were able to do it.
Dang, did you have to like figure all that out?
Yeah, it was a lot of troubleshooting too, because there were people listening in other parts of the world. So we had to figure out the round trip time for us to send signal to Mexico, have it come back to New York so we could stream it to California, and then they could all be in sync. I think it was like a 40 millisecond lag or something like that. You know, but we were like sending beeps through headphones and signals trying to figure out, oh, how many frames off is this? And then eventually we got it to line up so that we can all work together cohesively.
Wow. Because she's trying to match what she's watching.
Yeah, she's singing and matching the song. And if it's off, then it's, you know, it's not like a piece of dialogue that's coming through a phone where you could just nudge things back and forth. I mean, if the beat is off, then she's going to be off and it's not going to work out. So that was like a pretty crazy challenge. And then, yeah, the vocals ended up in the film and you would never know.
No, you wouldn't. Which again, that's testament to your job. How invisible can you make it?
Yeah. And then, awesome. We did the recording and then ended up flying it in. And then again, Lou Goldstein did the mix on everything.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah,
it was an experience working on that film.
Yeah. So how do you like, when you think about getting to work on a film like that, one, did you ever think that you would be doing this for film?
No. Yeah, it's funny. I forget who said it, but there's like an old joke that's like every sound engineer in film is just like a reject musician. You know? And it's, you know, in some ways it's funny how many of us were musicians at one point in time. And you know, I was doing session work. I was doing a lot of live shows. I was doing a lot of mixing in the music industry. And then just kind of, I don't know how the transition happened, but it did. But yeah, I think we have the luckiest job in the world in the sense, or one of the luckiest jobs, that we could just sit in a room and there's a screen and then just speakers. And then we see stuff on the screen and the sound comes out of the speakers. It's like, come on, you know?
Yeah, totally. So how do you, when you think about getting to the place that you are, what do you attribute to how you got to where you are?
I think part of it is just being lucky enough to have been born in New York, you know, been born into kind of like, you know, the family that I had, been lucky enough to have the friends that I've had, the experiences. And, you know, in some ways, I think that's sort of the grander culmination of it. It's just being here in this, you know, the concrete jungle environment. On a maybe more personal level, you know, I think it's important to just be nice to people and, you know, strike up conversations with people and get to know people and, you know, remember the names, remember the faces. I think that's a huge part of it. I think another massive part of it is, you know, work ethic. And also just being a student, being open to learn and, you know, especially in an industry that everything is changing, you know, kind of like what we talked about earlier. TikTok is just what, a couple years old, you know, there's so many eyes on it and there's so many people using it. So just being a student of what's happening and the technological advances and the craft and the art, I think that's part of it too, just being open to learning. There's multiple factors at play for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there any specific advice you would give to sound designers that are looking to break into the industry at this level?
I would say make a list of 10 studios you want to work at and get in touch with those 10 studios and see what you can do to get a foot in the door, whether it's an internship or like some sort of assist position or even, you know, something where it's like a front desk. You know, get a foot in the door, find out where you want to work. And like, if you have a favorite movie and you're like, these are the kind of movies I want to work on, see who worked on it. Like, look up the credits on IMDb and then see where they work and, you know, kind of follow the trail in that sense. Maybe another piece of advice that I would give people is, you know, and everyone says this, it's like the devil's in the details. You know, I used to do a lot of running work. Like, I was a runner at a music studio for a while. And sometimes they'd say, like, you know, if you're going to go out, like, these are the sandwiches you have to pick up, you know. And I would get like ketchup, mustard, mayo, you know, kind of get all the sauces just because, like, you never know who might want what sauce. So if you can be the person that brings them everything, they're always going to call you back because it's like, oh, we know if, you know, Gavin or Vinny are here, they're going to bring us 2 packets of ketchup, 2 packets of mustard. We're going to be set, you know? So just things like that where it's like, once you get a foot in the door, really, you know, shoot for the stars and see what you can do to make it happen.
What is the equivalent of getting all the sauces in sound design?
Good question. I mean, there's, you know, the cliche of like, see a sound, hear a sound. So it's like, see a footstep, hear a footstep. I think that's part of it. I think even the deeper level would be, you know, understanding the type of footstep, if it's like a scuffle or if it's like a flat plant, what shoe are they wearing? What's the surface that they're stepping on? Those are kind of all the things I would say that will make a difference if you can pinpoint that sort of detail and then implement it in your editing or your design or your mix or whatever it might be. And then also on a grander scale, I always say, like, whatever is best for the story, and like best for the film or the TV show or the commercial, is like what should be done. You know, you can throw a bunch of cool sounds in a commercial, a car commercial, but if it's not like representative of what BMW or Audi may stand for or represent, then it's going to sound slightly off per se. So I would say it's like, do what's best for whatever you're working on. It's not just about having cool sounds and being able to cut them in and go, you know.
Yeah, and I think I've heard those exact sounds in car commercials before.
Like, yeah, standard. It's industry spec.
Yeah, I'll now know that Vinny should get paid royalties when I hear that sound.
I appreciate you looking out.
Yeah, of course. Anytime. I got you. So that's good advice for sound designers. I'm curious for like producers and directors when it comes to working with sound designers and mixers. What advice would you give to have like the best collaboration possible?
I always like, and I think this answer might be different for everyone, but I always like getting brought in as early as possible. Like even if it's script or like treatment, just because then if I read the script and I see it says exterior in the suburbs, And it's like, oh, I know we're going to need suburban sounds for these, you know, scenes. And I could just start making a library of sound effects even before they shoot. So it, like, we're prepared in advance, per se. So I just like, and I think this goes for not just sound, but for like anything in post. It's like keeping open dialogue and communication and bringing people in as early as possible, if possible, kind of just helps keeps things flowing. Because then it's like you get to start a film in the edit or for sound or whatever it might be. And it's like, hey, we need all these, you know, bicycle sounds. It's like, oh, I wish I would have known this earlier, you know, or whatever it might be. So yeah, I just think communication and transparency is probably like the most important things when, you know, being collaborative and working with other people.
Yeah, for sure. And what's at risk if you're not brought in early?
Good question. I don't know if it's a risk per se, but I mean, you know, some people or like some projects, you might be on a timeline, like especially if it's a commercial, and just knowing in advance what's going to be needed is just helpful down the line. It'll be less stressful for everyone, and you can be sort of proactive, and it allows more for more creativity because you're saving time looking for the sounds you would need. And now, because you have them already, because you've seen the script, because you've seen the treatment, and then you can just say, oh, instead of just regular suburban verbs, maybe I want to, you know, switch it up and throw in these other sounds from the suburbs, like some lawnmowers or some kids playing outside, or you kind of have more flexibility knowing what you're going into. You know, there was a engineer I used to assist named James Toomey, who's an amazing engineer, amazing commercial mixer, and he would say it's always in the prep. And I think that's like truer words that ever been spoken.
Say more to that. What's in the prep?
Again, being able to have that dialogue and that communication with the director or the producer, and saying, you know, what do you want? What's going to make your life easier, and what's going to make this project better for you? Or what can I do right now, or that'll help us later on? And I think, again, it's just a matter of getting everyone on the same page as early as possible. You know, for sound specifically, it's like, you know, if we're going to need, like in The Heights, for example, we knew we were going to be working on a movie in Washington Heights. So me and three other sound editors, we got like a bunch of recording equipment, and we went out in Washington Heights and recorded all these sounds of that community and that neighborhood, made a database, and then we had those ready for when we started cutting the film. But now, if we weren't involved in that conversation earlier on, we wouldn't have been able to do that.
Yeah.
So that's just, you know, one example.
Wow. So if you're from The Heights, you're actually like recognizing the sounds that are happening
yeah.
in the film.
Uh-huh. They're that there. It's authentic.
That is nuts. Okay, I've got some rapid fire questions for you.
Oh boy.
Yep. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. If you had infinite budget and could work on something with any subject, on any subject, what would it be?
It'd probably be a film about New York in the 2000s, 2010s, we'll call it.
Okay. Say more.
I feel like that specific timeline is very like on the cusp of when everything started becoming super digital. So I think it was just an interesting transition period between, you know, you've seen a lot of businesses going from cash to credit card in that time. You've seen a lot of security cameras being put up, a lot of like red light cameras. So I think it could be interesting. And I don't know what the story is. I think the story is probably the most important part, but just that environment of transitioning from one sort of living... Let me start that again. Just that environment of transitioning from like one sort of lifestyle to another, you know, analog to digital, I think could be interesting to play with.
That's awesome. All right. Directors out there, writers, got a pitch for Vinny. He's in New York, 2008.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Housing crash. times.
Yeah. Yeah. You got like the stock market crashing sounds. You got cameras.
Big crashes right there.
Yep. Yep. What is what's one sound design technique or tool that you found indispensable in your work?
Like software or just like technique, you think?
Could be anything.
I like to pitch shift stuff a lot. So like, let's say we're, you know, in a movie and there's like a very serious tone, maybe, and there's a door opening or a door closing, maybe I'll pitch shift the door down to make it sound a little heavier, add a little weight to it. Just so it adds something deeper to the scene. And then conversely, like if it's an ambience and we're in this like nice romantic, you know, kind of like rom-com, maybe I'll pitch things up a little bit just to give like a little bit more of a higher energy, less of a lower energy. So I'll say pitching stuff up and down and stretching out sounds. Sometimes I'll make, I'll take like certain sounds, I'll like squeeze them. Sometimes I'll take them out and I'll draw them out. So
that's sick.
Yeah.
When you look ahead to the future, what's kind of the dream for you? The vision, where do you want to end up?
Good question. I mean, I just like working with people. I like making stuff sound good, making stuff sound cool. I think just the idea that we can all be in this collaborative space together and have this sort of medium of expression and then bring it to fruition is just awesome. And like, these are our jobs, like coloring, VFX, you know, editing. It's all just like crayons in a sense, even with sound, you know. So just keep working, you know, hopefully work on cooler projects with cooler people and having fun doing it.
That's awesome. Are there any upcoming projects that you're excited about, either that you've just finished up or that you're working on?
Yes. I'm working on this movie called, well, I will be working on this movie called Fior de Latte, which is a movie, some of it's taking place in Italy and some of it's taking place in New York. And I'm very excited because I have all these, I still have a lot of family back in Italy. And every time I visited them the past couple of years, I've been recording sounds, just not just for any, you know, just to do it. I had no idea that this movie was going to come down the pipeline. And then Nathan Marks, producer I've worked with a few times, he's like, hey, I got this movie. Half of it's in Italy, half of it's in New York. And I said, please, like, send it my way. Like, I have all these Italian ambiences I'm just waiting to use on something. So I'm excited to start working on that towards the end of this year.
Wow. And that's a feature?
Feature, yeah.
Cool. That's awesome.
So knock on wood, it'll be we'll be working on that soon.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see that. How can listeners keep up with you, your work, and any future endeavors?
I'm on Instagram. I'm not really a social media person, but I'm on Instagram at Vinny_Alfano and LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn more than I'm on Instagram.
Nice.
Yeah, but I'm not on either as frequently per se, but yeah, just that. And yeah, I'm open to, you know, DMs or message, whatever it might be.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I figured like SoundCloud. I'm just trying to think of any audio social media.
They should. Yeah, that would be, I don't know. It could be a little more of a social media aspect to SoundCloud. They should do that.
Hey, if you're listening out there, SoundCloud, I've got a great idea for
you.
Yeah,
yeah.
One that you've
Dad,
never
you're doing
of.
All the pitches today. You got movie scripts, SoundCloud advancements.
Yeah, we're really just trying to, you know, connect the dots here for people. It's right in front of them. It's right in front of them.
Like a real producer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. All right, Vinny. Well, thank you so much for coming on here, man, and for sharing just an awesome look and insight into the world of what it's like to work on sound for comedy specials and for films and everything. I feel like it's been really, really valuable to hear about some of your process and the different ways to approach these different genres of content. So it's been really great to hear from you. And I just, I'm sure we could talk about this for hours. So we'll definitely have to have you back on here.
Oh, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate you having me on the podcast. This is awesome. I really like the Riverside setup. I hope not giving away too much of that, but
no,
it's,
yeah,
it's such a cool vibe. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on.